If you love the History Extra podcast, make sure you follow us to keep up to date and get all the latest episodes. Thanks for your support, and I do hope you enjoy this episode. Hello and welcome to the History Extra podcast from BBC History Magazine, Britain's best-selling history magazine. I'm Ellie Cawthorne. After the fall of the Berlin Wall and the collapse of communism in East Germany, tens of thousands of Stasi officers suddenly found themselves out of work. For decades, the State Security Service had been a pervasive and terrifying force in the lives of millions of East German people. But what would happen to them now? In his new book, The Grey Men, the ex-FBI agent Ralph Hope tracks down the former Stasi officers, showing how they reinvented themselves over the following decades and rarely faced the consequences of their actions. He was joined in conversation by BBC History Magazine editor Rob Attar.
To begin with, could you please explain for our listeners who exactly the Stasi were, what their origins were, and what kind of activities they undertook in East Germany?
Yes, of course, the Stasi were the secret police organization, the Ministry for State Security for East Germany. They had their roots at the very beginning of the Cold War, after the Soviets left Germany, and they needed an internal security service of their own. So they were formed basically with the model of the Cheka, which was the predecessor for the Soviet KGB. As a matter of fact, the Stasi, or the Ministry for State Security, shield was fashioned by the Minister of State Security to be similar to that of the Cheka. And so that was what they took their beginnings from, and they built on it and actually quickly exceeded the capabilities of the Soviet services.
And so the Stasi have a reputation as being one of the most skilled and perhaps also one of the most feared secret police services. Do you think that's fair?
Well, they were the most pervasive. They had the most penetration. Their role was in a country about the size of Florida, or actually smaller than Florida, was to be mostly inwardly directed against their own citizens. And they functioned as a prosecutor. They had a military wing. They had complete reign over the actions that they deemed fit. Their sole purpose was to protect and preserve the leftist communist dictatorship that ran the GDR, as East Germany was called.
And if you fell foul of the Stasi, what kind of things might they do to you?
Well, it's interesting because many, many people in East Germany, probably most people, assumed they were under observation by the Stasi. Because the Stasi had 100,000 people at the end of 1989, that is a good reason for that. If a citizen attracted the attention, they had a whole range of things they could do, from grabbing you off the street, taking you to a prison, at which the fact that you were even arrested was a state secret. Or they could do other things, such as prevent you from getting into a university, prevent you from getting a job, prevent you from traveling abroad, and a whole range of things designed to basically control the individual citizen. And that's the unprecedented thing about the Stasi, is that because they had 40 years to perfect this, whereas the Gestapo operated for 12 years. Some people like to compare the two. There really isn't a comparison. The Gestapo, of course, were horrible. The supervisor of the Holocaust. The Stasi, when they began, within a few short years after they began, they quickly exceeded the capabilities of the Gestapo. And then as far as personnel, they doubled that capability every 10 years. So there was little that could be done in East Germany by anybody that would not, at some level, be observed either directly by the Stasi or by one of their hundreds and hundreds of thousands of informers that they called unofficial employees. And that is part of the true, one of the fortunate tragedies of this is the numbers of people that quickly were turned against their own family, their own neighbors, and how easy the Stasi were able to do that.
And so how many people would we say were victims of the Stasi over the 4 decades or so of the GDR?
It's estimated about 400,000, and about 280,000 were imprisoned. And the 400,000 is a number that is people that weren't in prison but were victimized in other ways. Likely, it's much higher than that. Germans, and even today, probably especially today, don't like to talk about it. And so if you were a victim, if you had your life diverted from your dream of going to the university and instead had to work as an auto mechanic for your entire career, you may not even know, or you may not want to admit that you were a victim of the Stasi. And so it's very difficult to quantify, but those numbers, I think, are a good starting point.
And this is quite a high proportion of the population, isn't it? Because East Germany didn't have a huge population to start with.
No, in the late 80s, I think it was around 16 million. Again, that's comparable to the population of Florida. And if you look at the number of offices and the number of people they had directed inwardly toward these 16 million people, it's pretty overwhelming. They also had a foreign intelligence arm that did operate outside of East Germany and throughout Europe. And the actions of that arm, called the HVA, is another quite intriguing story on not only what they did, headed by a well-known person named Marcus Wolf, who was commonly known as the Man Without a Face, to what they did after the wall came down to preserve their networks. And that part of that is what's included in this book.
So now, I guess we come to the pivotal moment in your book, which is 1989, 1990. The Berlin Wall comes down. Germany is united. What happens to the Stasi at this point?
Well, first, I think that in many cases, they had seen something coming for quite a while. Money had been transferred out of East Germany to various places, most of which has never been found. And we're talking of hundreds of millions of in Deutschmarks, but also in other currencies. And once the wall fell, the most ambitious of them, which they had many very educated, ambitious people, immediately rolled into other jobs. In some cases, entire sections of the Stasi were rolled into creating commercial enterprises in Germany, some of which are still operating now. And many of the files that were never found or were destroyed contained highly incriminating information, not only about people in Germany, but throughout Europe. And that was also a point of leverage that they successfully used because people continued to be afraid of them. And I think to some degree, there's still that fear in Germany and throughout Europe.
So as your book details, so many former members of the Stasi end up having successful careers in many ways. Was this because people didn't know about their past or were prepared to overlook it?
Well, you know, it's interesting because in my time in Eastern Europe, whenever I was in Germany and I brought this topic up about the question that started all this for me, it was a question because I'm trained as an investigator. And my question was, what happened to these guys? What are they doing? And so I asked a lot of people, a lot of Germans, this question. And when I asked regular citizens, people that, you know, I would come across in Germany, you know, I would frequently get a response of a look of quiet desperation. When I asked a person in government or somebody who is a Stasi expert in Germany, the response was more like embarrassed silence. There were no answers. So that's why I decided to try to get answers. And there's a lot of questions in the beginning of this book, and then there are some answers that really aren't going to be satisfying to many people in Germany who don't know some of this information that's laid out here. Generally, over the time since the wall came down, there would occasionally be somebody exposed and it'd be in the newspaper, but there was never an organized effort to determine, you know, how many of these people went on to stay in government, How many of these people are high-level corporate officers? How many are in positions of trust? It's not necessarily a problem if one of the 100,000 Stasi members is working in a particular job, but it may very well be a problem if there's no transparency and if that person is in a position of trust, perhaps dealing with victims, perhaps dealing with foreign policy, perhaps being a police officer. You know, many worked in the police. Many worked in the Stasi archives. Several still do to this day.
And despite Stasi attempts to destroy the records, there are records out there, aren't there, detailing who actually was in the Stasi?
It's very interesting because when the wall came down, the Stasi operated very meticulously, but in a pre-digital age. That's why there were 112 kilometers of paper files. Today, those files, with the flick of the wrist, would all be gone. But then, all they had was shredders. And when they started shredding, they shredded thousands of bags of records. And they also, the foreign intelligence arm, the HVA, successfully shredded their own personnel files. And they did so under a ruse of assisting the new government to, you know, go through files and such. And they were continued to shred well into a year after they no longer existed. Unfortunately, in the case of the HVA, there was another roster or list of identifying Stasi employees, one that they wouldn't have any reason to know about. It was something used by the Stasi people who maintained the records to locate personnel files and such. And that file was then found, which contained the names of every Stasi officer who was employed at the time the wall came down. That also, that list was then converted into a file, which was distributed at first in Germany, and until it was forced underground by the German privacy laws.
And despite the suffering that the Stasi inflicted on so many tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, am I right to say that virtually none of them were ever prosecuted?
I tried to determine how many of the Stasi officers were actually served jail. There were many, many investigations opened after Germany was reunified. So some people had reason for hope. There were very few prosecutions actually filed, and there were even fewer convictions for a Stasi officer doing something as part of his employment. Of those convictions, I found only one case of a Stasi officer who served jail time because of something that he did as a Stasi officer. Even the head of the Stasi, Erich Mielke, he was convicted not of anything to do with his creation of the Stasi, his 40 years of ruling as what the Germans knew him as, the master of fear. He was convicted of a murder of two police officers that occurred in the 1930s in which he was involved. That was before the Stasi was even created. So I think that most Germans don't know those statistics because they're not easy to find and they're not discussed. And when they are discussed, there's embarrassment.
Still to come on the History Extra podcast.
They can be sued. They can be fined for making some claim that they know to be true because they were there, but maybe they don't have a piece of paper.
Do you think that part of the reason why so many ex-Stasi people have just been able to carry on their lives was that the new German state was trying to bring the two sides of the country together and didn't want to stir up old wounds or just wanted to sort of move beyond the past?
Well, you know, when they had that unification agreement, it was quite amazing to be able to unify two countries in basically a year. I mean, it was unprecedented. In the rush to do that, there was a lot of things in the unification agreement that were later, I guess, discovered. And one of those was that if you had been trained by the Stasi to be a lawyer, at the Stasi University, which was in Potsdam, that you could practice law in unified Germany. The only problem was is that the legal training at the Stasi University was not designed to teach the Stasi officers how to represent clients. It was designed to teach them how to protect the state and how to protect the Ministry for State Security. So thousands of lawyers were unleashed following this that undoubtedly many citizens dealt with not having any idea that they were former Stasi officers. And the other big thing in the unification agreement that it was a clause that said that any prosecutions of Stasi officers would be based on the laws of East Germany, not the laws of the unified Germany. And that effectively is called by many as a get-out-of-jail-free card, because the legal system of the German Democratic Republic, the GDR, was designed to facilitate the Stasi being able to do anything at any time without any oversight. So many of those prosecutions were dead in the water before they even started because of that.
And I guess the obvious parallel, though there are many differences, would be with Nazi Germany and what happened to the perpetrators of Nazi Germany following the Second World War. Do you think there are any interesting parallels or comparisons to be made there?
Well, there are interesting comparisons to make. One is you have to remember that the Nazis, since World War II, they have never been, you know, portrayed favorably. They have never assimilated wholly into society. There were many cases of where they remained and became employed within the government in Germany, but they never succeeded in the amount of sheer penetration against their own citizens. The Stasi trained two generations of Germans to please the state over 40 years, four decades. So you have to look at what they did and what their impact was on those two generations. And I think that's where the comparison fails, because of course the Nazis, you know, they during the war, and they certainly helped propped up the Nazi regime. Many of the Nazis, some of the high-level people, seem to pop up in German politics and later in life. And that's what frustrated people in Germany, especially West Germany, during the decades following the beginning of the Cold War. It was that hope that that wouldn't happen with the Stasi. It was that hope that many of them had, that this would be a real reckoning, that they were disappointed on, because there was no reckoning with the Stasi. As a matter of fact, the Stasi went into an offensive mode after the wall came down and created new organizations to make use of the privacy laws and to make use of and hide behind the very things that were designed to protect the citizens of the unified Germany.
And as your book also shows, the Stasi have actively sought to challenge the historical record and, I suppose, redefine what the Stasi were in a much more positive light.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, in, when I started asking the questions over a period of several years, and actually up until, I was quite surprised even in 2019 how active the organizations were. And we're talking close to 30 years later. And I'm not talking about, you know, the image that I think that the Stasi wanted to project at the end of the Cold War was, you know, they're just a bunch of old pensioners and they did their job for their country and they went off, they disappeared. Well, that's not the case. Most of them were very young, actually, at that time. The ones that were employed, more than half were, I think, in their 30s. They continued being very adept in using the tools given to them. And I had one conversation with a Stasi officer, and we discussed what they would have done in today's world with Facebook and Twitter and all that. And the immediate response was, we would have adapted quite easily, I expect, was what I was told. And I believe that to be true, because what the Stasi did then with paper files and knocking on doors is much easier to do now if you have the same laws and if you have the free rein. That, I think, is what everybody needs to contemplate.
And were there any ex-Stasi who came forward and either apologized or denounced what the Stasi had done?
I'm not aware of any. I mean, they maintained a very proud And they still do maintain a very proud attitude towards their career. In 2018, they were preparing for the next anniversary celebration of the formation of the Stasi. And they have celebrations. So, I mean, it's interesting because they didn't just go separate ways and they didn't just fade away. Now, to be sure, many of the Stasi are receiving pensions. As of 2017, over 65,000 former Stasi officers were being paid a pension by Unified Germany, and they're living all over the world. Approximately 350 million euros per year. So that was a fact also that was surprising to me. It was surprising to me how active they remained. It was surprising to me how much they're still fighting to revise history. And it's surprising to me how little pushback there is in Germany now. And I think that some people still have a fear of maybe their own past being discovered. And others, I think, are embarrassed.
And on the other side of the divide, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the victims groups who are trying to expose the Stasi for what they were.
Yeah, initially, there were a number of victims groups in the 90s. Some of them still exist. They've been consolidated. But as the victims age, two things are happening. One is the system in Germany is there's a disincentive for them to speak up because they can be sued, they can be fined for making some claim that they know to be true because they were there, but maybe they don't have a piece of paper. The other thing is that after the privacy laws became in the last 5 years or so, even more onerous because of Facebook and things like that, that if they post something about their experience on their own Facebook page, which I mentioned some people in the book that have done that, there's a government bureaucracy that will entertain a complaint by a Stasi officer. And it's very onerous when you've been victimized, you've been trying to recover from being victimized your whole life. And then when you want to speak up, you get victimized again. So, those privacy laws have been far better at protecting the privacy of the former Stasi officers and the politicians of the SED, the East German Communist Party, than protecting any victims.
And actually, coming on to the SED, I'd be interested in your thoughts about how the Stasi are viewed today by the modern German left.
Well, of course, the left party in Germany is the legal heir to the SED Communist Party, which changed its name a couple times after the wall came down. I know for a fact, because I observed Stasi officers actively supporting current members of the left party in politics, in political campaign. I was standing in a Stasi office and I observed that. So they are still very involved. And the left party in Germany, as it is in the European left, is on the rise. And I had multiple people tell me that it's difficult to discuss these issues in Germany, and because it's easy to criticize the Nazi Germany. They can do that. Anybody can do that all day long, and they criticize the fascists. But the minute they criticize communism or criticize the GDR, there are organized efforts to silence them still. And that includes threats, telephonic threats made. That includes groups of former Stasi officers showing up to heckle people. This was 2019, 2020 that's happening. And that, I think, was surprising to me that after this long, the system hadn't dealt with those issues in efforts to preserve historical fact and clarity. Clarity is extremely important when you have young people growing up who don't hear much about in school about the Stasi or East Germany or communism. If you don't face your history, however uncomfortable it is, it may very well repeat itself, not only in Germany, but elsewhere in Europe and you know, even in the United States, there is a certain amount of kind of reinvention towards communism, or attempts at reinvention towards communism. And, you know, if you don't have historical clarity, and if you don't have the victims' accounts in front of you, it's easy for that to be shaded. And that's a danger.
And just one last question from me. Unlike a lot of people that we speak to, your background is working for the FBI for a number of years rather than being a historian. Do you think that your professional experience gives you an additional insights into this kind of story?
Well, you know, my job for, you know, more than 25 years was to talk to people and ask questions. I have a lot of respect for historians, you know, and what they do. But my focus was to look at this as I was conducting an investigation and to try to talk to the right people, sit down with some Stasi officers, sit down with victims, and actually get my questions answered. And it wasn't until one question that was answered caused me to have four or five other questions that, you know, I realized that this is a story that must be told, particularly in a couple of the heroes that I mentioned in the story. One in particular, Herbertus Knob, who has been fighting the Stasi for 30 years since the wall fell in Germany as a German. And, you know, at great personal risk. So I think this is a story that needed to be told, not just for the Germans, not just for the Europeans, but really for the Americans and people throughout the world who are wondering if they should believe people when they say that, you know, the Stasi or communists weren't that bad, that the numbers of victims were overblown. It's just very important to keep a clear focus.
Okay, Ralph, that's been really, really fascinating. Is there anything else you think we should have talked about that I didn't ask you about?
Well, one of the areas I mentioned is the 21st century Stasi, what it would be like. And that's a section of the book. And in that, I talk about what China is doing right now. And they have, in effect, created a internet Berlin Wall. And I think it's something that, to some degree, will give you an idea of what the Stasi would have done, and given the chance. And also, the Communist Chinese government remain very closely allied with the left organizations in Europe. They recently provided a statue to the town of Trier in Germany to celebrate the birthday of Karl Marx, who, of course, was the founder of global communism, the German. And they have been using technology to make it much easier to control and confine their citizens. So the Stasi would easily have made use of those tools. And it's very possible that had they survived, many of the Stasi officers felt that they could have survived if their government, had not lost the political will. And Erich Mielke, they had the Stasi, famously said when he was in serving prison, that had he received an order, there's no doubt in his mind that there would be a GDR today. And there is no GDR today, but I think it bears all of us to focus on where tyranny could come from and where it could spread. And it could spread faster than we may think. Even in some parts of Europe today, it's considered cool to have been a Stasi officer. And you never hear that reference a Nazi officer. But, you know, and so those are differences that people have to look out for, because this is a book about the present. And, when people read that last section, those last chapters, I think that's what I would like to leave them, is that it's very important to look clearly and to remember clearly and to remember who the victims were and who the perpetrators were.
That was Ralph Hope. His book, The Grey Men, Pursuing the Stasi into the Present, is out now, published by One World. Thanks for listening. This podcast was produced by Ben Hewitt, Jack Bateman and Brittany Colley. We'll be back tomorrow with the latest episode in our series on Britain's greatest prime ministers.